table for three. A good politician is never picky about his allies, because no ally is permanent. The master. The Pont au Pont in Pimlico was as much an outpost of French civilization in London as the embassy was of British grandeur in Paris. With its crowded tables, predictable menu, professionally surly waiters and fat green 2-litre carafes of house wine, it offered the political classes a private and boozy mimicry of French regional hospitality. Ever since it was first discovered by Eleanor Goodman, the then political editor of Channel 4 News, though the credit was as bitterly disputed as the discovery of the source of the Nile, the pool had been the scene of verbal treachery and unlikely alliances straddling politics. A formidable number of partridges, pheasants and poussins had been stuffed in its kitchens. An even greater number of secretaries of state, ministers and senior civil servants had been stuffed across its tables. Its candles gave off a sickly glow and dropped wax on the tables. So did many of its aging customers. It was here that Caroline had arranged to meet Angela after her urgent message from Devon. She was still shaking with shock and anger about the Daily Mail. The sheer treachery of that vile man Petrie, and she was worried about how she would deal with the debate. She had been a fool. She had been taken for a ride by Mrs. Umar. That much was clear. But there was nothing that could be done about it now. She needed help. She had called a number given her by the master, but the order that come back was a text message. You need your friends. Talk to Angela. It seemed spectacularly unhelpful. Nevertheless, when Angela called from Devon, sounding odd, Caro had cancelled lunch with a fellow backbencher and booked a table here. A contemptuous-looking French boy, fingering the crotch of his too tight jeans, greeted her at the door.
Yes, we are full.
I've booked a table. Name of Phillips.
Oh, oui. Follow me.
Shrugging sadly, he led her to a corner table set for three.
No, there are just the two of us. No, madame. Three. You eat for three. You pay for three. It is enough. I have not an asshole.
And he looked at her as if she were decaying vegetable matter and left her. There was a carafe on the table, 2 litres of house white. Caro, a little confused, poured herself a glass. She was staring at the menu when she heard an unexpected voice, huskier than Angela's.
Me too, darling.
She looked up. The master's wife, dressed in an expensive tweed jacket, was looking down at her.
How are you, Caroline?
Caroline smiled her best smile. With most people, this had the effect of a blast of ultraviolet light. But Sadie merely smiled politely back as she sat down.
I'm joining you. That's why it's a table for three.
It's all right, Angela knows. And so does my husband.
He's in Paris, rallying the troops like the king over the water.
When Angela arrived soon afterwards, however, she didn't seem entirely pleased to see Sadie. Nevertheless, the three of them ordered and began to talk. Caroline outlined the nightmarish position she found herself in. Apparently supporting Sharia law for Northamptonshire, apparently a fellow traveller for FGM. She could deny it all, explain that she'd been set up, but that would make her the laughing stock of the House of Commons and the enemy of all the Muslims in Barker, of whom there were many. Furthermore, if Leila Umar came out against her, who would be believed? Leila Umar was an impressive and plausible woman. Sadie listened quietly. Finally, she said,
I've spoken to my husband, but I already knew what he'd say. Think like a politician. For a politician, every threat, every looming disaster is an opportunity. Embrace risk. It's the only way forward. So you're to apologize, to eat humble pie when you're attacked by that Scottish man who's jumped on the bandwagon. You need to surprise them.
Caroline was unimpressed.
How? By turning up in a niqab? No. Remember why you first softened towards Mrs. Umar. These people are being attacked. The rest of us are complacent. You don't support all aspects of Sharia law. Of course you don't. You were speaking out against FGM long before David Petrie left his building sites. Today you're known for two things. You're known for your sexual preference and you're known as a woman of faith. Accentuate it. Talk about the God of love. Talk about mutual respect and decency. Talk about areas for women who happen to be Muslim where they can feel safe.
Angela drained her glass and joined in the conversation for the first time.
That's all very well, but I don't think it will wash. Not compared to what they'll be throwing at Caro. Quite right, said Sadie. So we have to go further. Suppose the Muslim community in Springtown are attacked just as Mrs. Umar was in the park. Suppose there's an angry, extreme Christian leader in the area who picks up Petrie's comments and leads a mob there.
Well, of course that would change things, said Caro.
But suppose...
Angela, confronted by a small plate of casserole, suddenly looked queasy.
Sadie, that isn't why I've just been approached by Titus Croak, is it?
Yes, well, Angela, you know what Titus Croak stands for, I'm sure. Against women priests. Against the Catholic menace. But above all, against Islam in Britain. What he calls the March of the Heathen.
Caroline stabbed a rabbit. He is foul. Titus Croak represents everything in the church, in fact everything in religious life, that I most detest. He's a man who knows only how to hate. God forbid we ever see the likes of Titus Croak stirring things up in Barker.
Sadie had barely touched the food on her plate, but now she dabbed her lips, picked up her handbag, and rose from her chair.
God's a little late, I'm afraid. Titus Croak is already on the march. Someone's tipped him the wink.
He seems to have got some money from somewhere.
We know nothing about any of that.
But if you want a cudgel with which to hit back at your smug Mr. Petrie, here it is. She pulled a small piece of crudely printed paper from her handbag. On one side of it was a photocopy of the Mail article with David Petrie's words highlighted. On the other was a call to arms. English people, Christian people, were summoned to meet a march in Caroline's constituency. The stenciled headline read, "Spires, not minarets."
"I must go," said Sadie, "and leave you, Angela, to drop your little bombshell in privacy."
Angela, appearing dumbfounded, made a shrug of incomprehension in Caroline's direction. Once Sadie had left the restaurant, she took a hefty swig from her wine glass and began to talk, and talk fast.
What the hell was that all about? I got a call from someone I've never heard of saying that Sadie was going to be joining us here. Did you invite her? I thought not, so how the hell did she know where we were meeting? And all that about Titus Croak, it was as if he knew in advance what your problem was and had somehow fixed a solution.
Caroline broke in.
Because, of course, it is a solution. If I can make it seem that David Petrie is somehow connected to an extremist mob, then I can show why some kind of protection for Muslims, even if it isn't Mrs. Umar's pet scheme, is urgently necessary. He'll look like a thug. And I'll be able to speak for moderation. Live and let live. I can remind the Commons about my record, our situation. This is my way out.
God, but it's clever.
But don't you see? Said Angela. Sadie and her husband must be in collusion with Titus Croak. Just this morning, he sent me the most vile email. He said that I was doing Satan's work, and that you and I were in, and I quote, an abominable union. He said lesbians should be excommunicated from the church, that we were the witches of the modern age.
He said that?
He said that.
Marvellous!
Marvellous?
Yes, marvellous.
If I quote that in the Commons, there's hardly a member on either side who won't back me just to show their contempt for that kind of medieval bigotry.
In the most bizarre way, this is getting better and better.
By now, however, Angela seemed livid.
You really don't get it, do you? Titus Croak has been put up to this by the very people you seem to be working for. The whole thing's a cynical game. It might help you tomorrow night, but what about those poor people in Barker? Somebody could well get hurt. If Titus Croak is involved, frankly, it's almost certain.
Well, Angela, I can stop that. If I blow the whistle in time, the police will have to step in. Leila Umar and her community will have no choice but to see me as their protector. After that, I'll be able to dictate how far and how fast we go in changing the law for Springtown. And as for you, it's all very well haranguing me about Barker, but it's a complicated place. It's not like your little idyll in a valley in Devon.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about. That's the little bombshell that Sadie knows about somehow. Caro, darling, we may be having an argument, but I love you more than life itself. So I've come to a decision. I'm leaving Pebbleton. I'm coming up to Northamptonshire. I've already applied for a living there. No more week after week apart. No more of you criss-crossing the country for a few snatched hours. No more of me angry and lonely by myself thinking of you. We're going to be a proper couple from now on. I'm going to be your eyes and ears in Barker. I'm going to work with all the communities there, and you're going to have the kind of support you need if you're going to do everything that you can in politics. We are one. We should start behaving that way.
Angela's speech had been delivered calmly enough. Nobody looked around from the other tables, near though they were. But by the end of it, her cheeks were wet with tears, and Caroline was crying too. They dried one another's faces, kissed lightly, and held hands under the table. After they had left, another of the waiters came up behind the one who had ushered Caro to the table. He put his hand on his bottom and squeezed lightly.
Funny women. Oui, all those uteruses around one table.
And they both shuddered.